Thanks for downloading this podcast, which is for personal use only. All contents are copyright Radio Show Limited and must not be reproduced, rebroadcast, or used in any form without permission. For contact details, go to www.radiolemon.com. Live from the beach, the hand-cooked 12 hours of Zandvoort.
Hello everybody and welcome along to a brand new event. Not often we get to say that. It's John Hindhoff here, just turned midday Central European time, and a delight to be with you from the dunes around Zandvoort on the North Sea coast of the Netherlands. And we are here for the latest edition to the Creventic calendar. This is the Hankook 12 hours of Zandvoort. We've got some practice, some qualifying and some of the race today, because being Creventic, they're not doing everything exactly as you might expect. We have practice qualifying, or qualifying coming up after the practice, as I say, and then 3 hours of the race today. The cars are then banged into a Parc Fermé, and then they come out tomorrow and do the last 9 hours. We'll be covering that as well. It's part of our Super Endurance Weekend for Mobile One, Radio Le Mans, 91.2 FM around the Circuit Atlas Sarthe, of course. And even as we speak, the advance party for the Le Mans 24 Hours for 2014 are heading down there in the Audi Q7 and the Nissan NV400. And they will be setting up today and getting themselves sorted out tomorrow, and then of course broadcasting live, the only live broadcast for the 24 hours test, which is throughout the day tomorrow. And that is live here on RadioLeMans.com as well. Delighted to say that it's not just me who will be wambling through the next couple of hours or so, because down in the pit lane is Nick Damon. Good afternoon, Nick.
Good afternoon, John, and good afternoon everybody who is listening in this marvellous sunny weather, which is only here because I'm here. I had at least six different members of Creventic team say, "Hi, Nick, you've brought the weather with you." I'm thinking, well, I'm not going to dissuade them, because it was chucking it down when I left England and chucked down the whole way here. I'll take the praise, but it's just down to the good old God himself that we've been smiled on by sun flowing across the dunes with the poppies on the banks and the people in this most historic non-Tilke circuit.
Nick and I are virgins at Zandvoort. We have been looking after this. Well, first time we've been here, isn't it?
Well, that is true. Yes,
In fact, I was factually correct.
Yes, in that way. I just wonder what else is coming in this evening. We're close to Amsterdam, after all.
The circuit has lived up to all expectations. However, standing just off to my right in our elevated, lofty, some would say, position among the dunes here at the end of pit lane in a spacious commentary box is Bruce Jones. Bruce, you've been here a few times with a number of different series.
A fair few. Back to 1992, I came here for the Marlborough Masters Formula 3 race and absolutely loved it. And then I had, I'm sure it was three visits here with A1GP. And in one of those years, if we look straight ahead from our commentary box, John, up towards the final corner, you can see the track coming in. It was a wall of people over the 2 days. We had 120,000 people coming here to hope that Jeroen Blekemolen could win for A1GP Team Netherlands, and it was just fantastic. It really was festival time. But this circuit, I just adore it. I think it provides so much in a country that's, you know, largely pancake flat, to have gradient, to have cambered corners, to have ups, downs, lots of twists. Of course, it's not the circuit that it was back in the days before, back in the 70s. It has been curtailed, but it really provides a fantastic challenge for the drivers. And talking to some of the crews down in the paddock just now, a lot of them are also Zandvoort virgins, so they're really looking to get their teeth sunk into it. But with these Creventic series races, they get a lot of track time.
They had a couple of tests yesterday, and this morning the cars were out as well. Those were not taken part in by everybody. We had 33 cars out though this morning, and the track was quite busy at that. There are 52 entries, just pointed to me by the left forefinger of Mr. Jones, standing next to me. We can see, I would think, about 75-80% of the circuit from where we are. If you know the track, we are just beyond the start gantry, right opposite the main grandstand with its various colours of blue and white seats. And it is a greenhouse. It's going to get very, very warm in here across the weekend. The wind at the moment blowing up from the south, pretty much directly from the south.
But one of the delights, I can't think of any other commentary box where you can be so high above a tight corner. We're looking down on the Hugenholzbocht, which, John, as you came in yesterday, you couldn't believe how close the apex of that corner, or the outside of the corner, is to the start-finish straight. There's this narrow, narrow pit entry, a fence, a pedestrian walkway, and it's not even an in-and-out track. You get lots of congestion.
It's not two lanes wide between the concrete barriers on the outside of Hugenholz and the catch fencing on the start-finish line. Mm. I mean, it's just remarkable. One of the things that I didn't realise about Zandvoort, and even looking at a circuit map, Bruce, you don't get the sense of it, is just how little real estate now it takes up. It's all been squashed into a fairly short, a small area.
It has. I mean, back when it opened for racing just after the Second World War, it was effectively almost a square with rounded off corners and then the loop down to Tarzan. But where we are now, we can see all the circuit through Tarzan, through Gerlachbocht, Hugenholzbocht, up the rise, quite a steep rise actually, over Hunsrug, down into Rob Slotermacherbocht, where it snaps left. Then we can see it to shape black, and then is the first time we really lose it. And those of you with circuit maps to hand, it drops down to the second point of abbreviation, which is Masterbocht. Then it doubles right again at turn 9, as I'm bitten on the chin by some flying insect. Left at turn 10, we then lose them again, having seen them at turn 10. They come down to the tight chicane, the Hans Ernstbocht, which is a tight right and then a left. And then up into the final corner, which is a lot closer to when originally it was Bos Uit, but they built a huge sand dune. So we got those two fast rides, but it's still an appreciable start-finish rate down to that wonderful breaking point at Tarzan.
So where we can see the emergency vehicles at the moment at the start,
he would have been on the track.
Yes, so it was a lot further back down that way, was it? Down to where we drove in
absolutely.
Yesterday.
Yes.
Okay.
And but
in fact, there's a housing estate and hotel and all sorts of things down there now.
Yeah, but the key is the fact this circuit has fantastic flow.
Yeah,
and I think anywhere where you've got cambers and a bit of quite a lot of gradient change, and yes, of course, being in the dunes, sand is off. I was looking at it this morning; it's blowing at Hugenholzbocht. But we've had heavy rain in the past week, really heavy, and it meant the track was really, really clean when the drivers went out to play yesterday evening for the chances for people to be driven around the circuit. But circuit in pristine condition this morning.
Let's head down to Nick Damon in the pit lane. A number of people that we recognise from the 24 hours at Dubai.
Yeah, but a number of cars. Some of the cars are the cars you expect to be near the front, and some of the cars are the cars which tend to trouble the rescue vehicles more than some of the others. No names of Pat Deal, i.e. the GC cars. There's a few names. This obviously, as you look at the field, you scream off the top GT3 drivers, your Bleeker Molins and everyone else, and that's what's kind of left. You've kind of lost that top 15 GT3 cars, and the rest of the 80 car field is kind of represented pretty evenly across with the top amateurs and a few semi-pros and some very nicely prepared cars. But one thing I was trying to work out, the track is interesting. It's very narrow, and it's, as you say, very condensed in one place. So the only other track I can think of which has so much track and settled real estate is Valencia. Not the street circuit, the circuit Ricardo Torme. I'm sure Tim at the moment is saying, you don't pronounce it like that.
Nagaro's also pretty tight.
Yeah, and the only thing is, though, the pits are not copious. They're sort of Thruxton-esque, really, in their size, and they've got three cars in most of them, apart from car 5. Now, I don't know what car 5's done, the Corvette. And I'm just trying to see who the entry of car 5 is, and perhaps Bruce can jump in and tell
me. I can. It's V8 Racing, who run a lot of cars in various GT series around Europe.
For some reason, they've got an entire garage themselves. They've even managed to put up their little their Vodafone sponsorship awning, kind of panelling around the side. Everyone else is squeezed in three to a garage, and car 5 going, hello, I think we'll have the whole garage to ourselves. So obviously there's a story behind that.
Well, maybe they plan to enter three cars, because they often do.
Ah, well,
they withdrew.
Got just the one. Yeah, so it is a. I mean, obviously you've done Dubai as well, Bruce, and it is. There are a lot of very familiar cars and very familiar names. I saw a green M3 that's been there for a couple of years, and there's a selection of other. I suppose you say touring cars and one make series, but lots of Renaults. But there are still quite a few things like SLSs, and certainly some money around in some of the teams.
A lot of SLSs at the front end. But one thing I particularly like at Sandford, you get down to the far end before you turn right at the end of the pit lane to go into refuelling, and there's a refuelling for grown-ups as well. There's that wonderful Mickey's bar. I walked in there this morning. It's just like walking into a pub on a sunny morning.
That's a good point, of course. I am walking free and easy in the pit lane in my Radio Le Mans shirt, because there's no need for fire suits, because there's no, again, as in Dubai, there's no fueling in the pit lane. There's no space for it, basically. So they have set up a set of pumps set up at the at pit out and down towards the right. You turn right and then go through a very sort of odd one-way system.
A long left-hand loop, effectively. Yeah. And there are three refueling stations that I saw this morning. We're about to have cars on track, Nick. I can see the.
They've been pushed out. The pit lane itself is quite wide. And there's a space in the middle where they've pushed them all out, which I'm sure at some point someone NCP would try and sell parking for.
Well, it does look like diagonal parking the way it's marked out there, but. Yes, we have some of the sort of smaller class cars, but the GDL Racing Mercedes is up there. And that was due to have Giovanna Amati in it, who's
really?
increasingly coming back to play, but she's not this weekend. So Nigel Farmer and team owner Gianluca De Lorenzi are being joined by German driver Norbert Powells, number 7. But the most eye-catching of the SLS is number 33, which is from the Car Collection Motorsport team, and it's white with that inimitable Martini Racing livery.
Ah, yes. The car that's caught my eye is car number 48, which is a Peugeot RCZ.
Looks like Norwich City down there, doesn't it? Well, it's green and yellow, and it really stands out.
Yeah, the reason it's caught my eye is because I had a Skelectric car painted in exactly the same colours. It's an old-fashioned flat red and an old-fashioned flat yellow. And I think I had a Jim Clark Lotus 25 in my... because I've had a Skelectric from 1965 when I was born. I am that old and not wearing well. And apart from taking it apart to see what makes it work, and it frustrated my father had to put it back together again because I couldn't do that part. I did remember painting a yellow stripe round it, which was in green. So that RCZ to me is a Jim Clark Lotus.
Well, let's hope it doesn't get sort of twanged into a table leg then. Or
no, I learned a lot from Skeletor. A how to take things apart, eventually how to put that together again, and more importantly, don't touch the prongs of the plug when you're plugging in, because suddenly you find yourself the other side of the room.
Quite so indeed. So we're going to get busy, and this is only a short session building up, of course, towards qualifying later on. Many, many classes in this, Nick, which is always keeps you on your toes. There's different coloured lights to help you.
There's normally a Nick explains it all. Effectively, I think there are as many classes here in the 52 cars as there are with the 86 we see in Dubai. Apart from that, the GT3 class is not split in two. It's all just white. There's not a pro and am side of that. There are coloured lights, and they all have their position numbers as well, as we saw in Dubai. It is the top class is blue lights at the back. The secondary class is green lights, and the all the other class. So SP6, if you count the secondary class, is just a green lights. GT3 is in blue lights, and everything else, which is the collection of racing hatchbacks and specials, they all have red lights. And I believe it's supposed to show position in class. We'll wait to see. Because during the practice, you're just showing overall position, wasn't it, Bruce?
It was indeed. I thought that was going to segue beautifully into they have green lights and we have green lights, and the cars will go out for their half-hour practice session.
That sounds like professional broadcasting. There's no chance of me doing that.
Yeah, no, we could have stumbled on it.
Some sort of leak is going on. I'm just walking across now. It is an interesting pit lane. This must have been pretty impressive with the A1 GP cars running out, because it's a very short pit lane, and they have pit stops, don't they?
I'm trying to remember that long ago now. No, I don't think we did. Yes, we did. What am I talking about? It must have been white cleaned by the evening spent in Sandford.
Yes, that'll be the one.
But, I mean, what was different then was, we've got racing this evening, but the dune all the way down to Tarzan and most of the way around the rest of the track were absolutely chock-a-block. But the weather the last time we came here was so foul, people sort of dug themselves in like when you're being buried on the beach, and you could literally see their heads, and some of them even had tarpaulins over their heads. It looked like they'd been buried by some sort of...
A bit like those terns that kind of, bob their heads up from their
exactly.
holes when they're looking after their babies.
Yeah, but I just think it's fantastic. I really love coming to Zandvoort. We've got a little bit of cloud in the sky now, but it's all set to be fair for today and tomorrow, which is truly great news. Because certainly when the wind blows here, Nick, it certainly can come in off the North Sea.
Exactly, it'll blow hard, blow cold, and it'll blow some dust. I think we've lucked out with a couple of fantastic days of weather, which is always, I think, important, because you don't want to add, I don't think you want to add rain to this multi-class. Because one thing I was thinking when I saw the track, apart from being, I don't want to get, you know, I'm not the most romantic of people, I actually like some of the Tilke circuits, but this is a fantastic circuit. It's just beautiful, and it's one of the real classics, and I have driven it in a virtual world, but only in 1967 on Grand Prix Legends. The one thing I did notice about it was, it's very narrow for multi-class racing.
It is, and of course we do have a a very appreciable speed difference between a Renault Clio and an SLS Mercedes. I now see why we're delayed, because there's a flatbed coming down to the chicane with a car upon it, which was in the doing practice with the support race.
They've
and hopefully it
busy.
Can peel in the back way, because there is a gate just at the next corner.
We've had a bit of action so far this morning, and most of it has involved flatbeds. Someone dumped their Porsche against the wall and then threw loads of oil everywhere. A couple of cars fell off the track.
At the final corner, coming out of Arie Leundijkbocht onto the start-finish straight.
And whilst we were doing a comms test, we completely missed an accident on the front on the start-finish straight.
Yes, so look out, well, you know, sometimes you can have a commentary box from which you can see too much, guaranteed to look out the wrong window. But one driver would be good to get hold of, Nick, is Renger van der Zander, who's obviously racing a lot in the sports car series, the United Sports Car Series in the States, racing DTM for Mercedes, but he's in the Martini livery, number 33.
Did he do A1 GP or something?
He did A1 GP. Oh. And, I think he was still a sort of 18-year-old then, so he very much enjoyed the World Tour and all the promotional stuff. He's really, very sort of smiling individual. Well, in fact, the Dutch boys were fantastic, because Jeroen Blekemolen is, ultimate pro, and caused huge excitement here with his brother Sebastian and father Michael doing skid cars down the straight. In fact, I think the skid marks are still there. But
there are, if you look on, I don't know whether you get a chance to see the cameras on the live streaming, of course, that we have for the Crevent events, but certainly on the start finish straight, there have been a lot of donuts and a lot of burnout done, and there is a kind of patina of circles, and we have a green light. The first car out is the 105. Which is the Hughes machine, the British car, I would assume.
Ginetta.
Yeah. And that's now followed by a phalanx of BMWs and...
including one of the noisiest cars, one of the Gomez Competition GC. If you squint, they look like 3 Series BMWs. In fact, even maybe 1 Series BMWs, but they have 6.2 litre engines in them.
If you squint, they look like racing cars. One thing I would say is there is an absolute plethora of all sorts of BMWs here. Normally you see a large amount of Renaults, but there are so many different BMWs, 120s, about 4 different generations of 3 Series. I put my money on it, and not very much, that the BMW is the most represented mark here by a reasonable distance.
I think your money is safe today with that. In fact, I think the big difference between the field that we last saw, which was in Dubai, is we've lost the Ferraris, we've lost the A6 cars, really, by and large. But yet we've kept the SLS Mercedes.
Yeah, there's one Ferrari.
And a Corvette.
Me, and there's an R8 as well. Well, I think the R8 is... I'm not sure that R8 104 is actually running in the GT3 class. There's SP3, no, it's
SP2, SP2 class. Yeah. That was in... Martin Shaunier's car, that did race in Dubai.
We've got a couple of Lamborghinis. The number 10 Lamborghini goes by me now to get some fuel, so that'll be a while, filling up the 1 million litre tank.
Yep, for how much? Yeah, we have one Lamborghini.
There goes the Martini SLS, and you're absolutely right. You're picking off a livery favourite straight away there, Bruce.
Well, it also stands out. I mean, luckily in this bright weather, we'll be able to see everything. But in the Ferrari, the lone Ferrari, entered by Praha Racing from Prague, is Peter Cox, who's apparently this year clocking up 30 years as a race driver.
Oh, so I thought Peter was involved more with the Lamborghinis. Oh, well, never mind.
He is, but no weekend off. Obviously, a bit of coaching here or there. But yes, he's normally with Liepert Engineering, isn't he?
So there's as you say, I think that's... if you take away the sort of the 15 or 20 very expensive big entries in GT3 or A6, as it's called, from Dubai, that's what you've got. So you've got an incredibly competitive field. And I'll tell you right now, none of us have any idea who's going to be a front runner, let alone a winner.
No, and it's good to see some new faces as well. I was just talking to Doug Cole earlier today, DC Motorsport. He and his teammates, Robin Walker and Simon Byrne, normally race their MGZRs in the UK in the MGZR series, but they've done some Brit car 24 hours, Zolder 24 hours. They said they apparently led one Brit car a couple of years ago for 17 hours until the suspension collapsed, which wasn't so handy. But this is their first sighting of Zandvoort, and they are so excited to be here. And why wouldn't you be? A lot of track time, great circuit, and also a 12-hour race where you stop for supper and a night, this evening we'll finish here at sort of 7 o'clock. when the curfew falls, and then we can head out and take our choice of restaurants.
That's right. Yeah,
just I think the Mall might catch on, run it over 3 days.
I think that's a brilliant idea.
Yeah, lunch, a big lunch stop. Is in France, after all.
Yeah, the best way to do Le Mans is 4 6-hour races.
Yeah.
You know, you run the
Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
You run Thursday and Friday, you run them into the darkness, and then on Saturday and Sunday, you run them right in peak times, you know, avoiding...
For TV.
Exactly.
Shaping up well, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a great idea.
And that's, I mean, I'm sure Le Mans will be chuffed because they get a lot more people through the door for longer, you know.
You're listening to live coverage of the free practice session for the Hankook 12 Hours of Zandvoort. Good afternoon, if you are just joining us. Bruce Jones up here with me, John Hindhoff, in the booth. And it's Nick Damon down in the pit lane. Now, we saw Martin Byford, the scourge of Snetterton, the Snetterton expert. He's come over on his brand new BMW 1200. Literally just picked it up last week. This is the first big trip for him, as Maximilian Burke goes quickest in both sectors 1 and 2, and is under 2 minutes in the number 1 Mercedes-Benz. This is the Hoffa Racing Swiss-entered AMG GT3. We have got something like 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, I think, full house GT3 cars. Then there's a few GT3 Cup cars, if you think of things like the Porsches. And we have got these Mark Focus V8s, the 5-litre V8s from Australia. The three of them that we saw at the Liqui Moly Bathurst 12 hours earlier on. And you weren't down there for that, Bruce. I saw them there. I was terribly impressed. And you...
I made a beeline for them this morning. I thought, haven't seen before. Now, what I didn't realise, looking at them, you know, you think, actually, the concept of... a Focus with a 5-litre V8, I like that, you know, 5-litre, good engine size. But it was the fact Keith Kosulke, one of the drivers there, was telling me how they can put any car body on top of that. Mm. And you just think of the applicability in countries that don't have a lot of racing. I mean, fantastic cars. James Kay reckons they're bulletproof. Okay, he said that after only driving them early on. He said they just have that feel. But you could put a BMW body on, you could put whatever you want. So they've brought three of them here. The intention is... I'm sure they'll sell a lot more in Australia, but the Bathurst 12 Hours was their shakedown run, effectively. But for Ryan McLeod, who runs the whole project of Mark Cars, this is a very, very good shop window. Be interested to see how they go, but James Kay, having his first experience, is really positively interested.
Two of them are currently in the pits, and I think one of them went to the fuel station, so they're not currently running out, but they probably have run out so far in the practice session, so whether they need to do much more mileage this free practice, because obviously the cars have had the promoter test, I'm sure they call it in America. In fact, one of the cars comes off, it's still...
No, this is actually a proper free practice session.
Yeah, no, they've run in the previous
sorry.
One.
Oh, yes, sorry, no, yes, sorry, I see what you're saying.
So, 92 just come off his jacks, and the other car, the 90, I think it's the 94
I think we need to explain, Nick, the... Sorry, large seagull just got in my way as I was about to look down the pillar.
I have that problem all the time.
We need to explain to the uninformed listener, who perhaps hasn't heard us doing Dubai before, how pit stops and fueling, etc., work in terms of logistics, at least, if not of the sporting regulations, which are legion, and I think I may have left them in the car.
Basically, the pit lane, which is where I patrol... is quite short and quite compact, and most of the garages, apart from the garage car number 5, which has pulled some sort of real flanker, have three cars in them. Now, for a normal pit stop where you would do a driver change and or an optional tyres, you actually do pull up to a slot in front of your garage and you therefore change the tyres of the driver. I suppose you try and coordinate with your fellow garage mates, so it doesn't happen at the same time. But for fuel, there is no fueling in the pit lane. Now, the fuel, effectively, you go to the end of the pit lane, you make a sharp right, and then you follow an exciting one-way system that loops you around in a long left-hand turn into the kind of space between the end of the pits and the hairpin at the end of the straight. You do a loop, and there are three fueling stations. I assume there's probably... I'll go and check whether the diesel's also is somewhere else, because you do have some 120 diesel BMWs in this event. And you queue up for fuel, and if you've got it right, you haven't got a queue, and you just fill up and off you go, and the fueling will be done to a certain number of litres based on the capacity of the car and the class you're in, and then you drive out. So the key point is to make sure when you get to the petrol pumps, and they're your standard petrol pumps you'll find on any forecourt near you, you want to just not be queuing. So that's when you kind of think about the tactics of when you come in during the code 60s, because it's not full course yellow here, it's code 60s, and whether you want to come in because you have a problem getting fuel and those sort of things. So that's, again, once again, the same as Dubai, you drive out of the pit lane and off the petrol station.
But if you're driving a diesel, there are only 6 diesel entries, so logistically they have a far easier time getting to their
pumps.
Where
does that cycle back in, Nick, once you've done that?
Literally, it's a loop where you go... there's just enough room for 2 lanes of cars turning right out of the pit lane, and you go in a big kind of anti-clockwise left-handed loop once you turn right, which takes you back in again. So Ferrari's about to go in front of me from Praha, but unfortunately he's let me down there by stalling it and not giving it full revs, and he's come on, off you go.
Driver coaching as well, Nick. You really are multi-talented.
It is, isn't it? Do you not feel that, you know, that's going to be worth at least £200 a day, me going, come on, off you go?
Our connectivity to the World Wide Web is a little flaky at the moment, but we are getting some tweets here, so do tweet at Specutainment, at RC Racing, we are watching those. Hello to the guys from Irish Becht, and thank you, because we are wearing the Franks, matching Franks we've got today, haven't we?
Oh yes, we are.
Although I haven't got the full tint, I've only got the graded tint, and if you haven't seen it yet, we've already put the selfie up on the internet, and Kevin Payne says, I hope you don't take offence, but I immediately thought of Little and Large. I do take offence at that, actually.
I find that very funny.
Rock. No, it was Supersonic, wasn't it? That was it.
That would be you then.
Yeah, I know. I'd rather be Large.
Let's run down some times for you. Maximilian Burke, GT3 champion, winner at Spa 24 Hours, of course, in the A6 category. That is the GT3 category. The number one Mercedes-Benz leads it with a 147.3, just coming up into second place with the number 7 GDL Racing Mercedes SLS.
So it's 4 Mercedes in the top 4 places.
Oh yes, it
now.
Is, yeah. Number 2 in the pits, Roland Eggemann, also an A6 car, and that is the teammate to the fastest. Now, 1 and 2 have got the same driver lineups. Obviously they can't be in both cars at once, but clearly they're going to just have a lot of fun. And in third position, the 33 Car Collection Motorsport, that, as Bruce rightly says, another 6.2 AMG GT3. They're a little further off the pace on a 52.3, but the top three are within a couple of seconds around here. First of the non-Mercedes and non-GT3s is an A3T car. Which is pretty impressive.
It is. I was watching this one yesterday. It's entered by MDM Motorsport with Jeroen van der Boer, who's in the car this morning, Simon Knapp and Bas van der Ven. And it was so impressive. When you don't have a stopwatch on something, but you just think that is cornering so crisply. Watching it through Gerlachbosch, the little right flick behind the paddock, and then working its way. Through Hugenholzbach, and look at its braking point down into Tarzan, a very, very well driven car. But then again, I think it's a local car, so it clearly they know the driver, the circuit very well indeed.
Sixth position is the best of the A5 runners, and that is the number 30 car, the top Auto Tyler Racing, yes, and that is a E46 World Touring car, it says. But I don't think the World Touring cars were ever 3.5 litres.
Not according to their paperwork, anyhow.
Well, maybe that's why they were so successful.
Yeah, but that's just checking who's on board. That's Jochen Krumbach, but they've got Donald Molinar on the driving force there. He's a very, very handy driver. And obviously Zandvoort, his home circuit, so that will go better still later on.
And in fact, just popping up in the third position is the best of the SP2 runners. They're at the sharp end of the field.
That's the Renault Megane Trophy entered by Las Moras Racing. On board at the moment we have Jan-Joris Verheul, who was in that car, out of that car, he's now back in. He's taken over from Duncan Hussman, who obviously has a huge history here, not just as a racing driver, but his father was clerk of the course here back in the 70s. And so much like the Blaker Molens, the Hussmans are, you know, they are Zandvoort.
Just trying to see if there's any other classes that we... Oh, we haven't done the diesels, have we? The D1 class, led by the number 71, and apologies for the slight stuttering.
That's the VW Golf.
It is indeed, the TTC Racing Swiss entered car. Just two drivers I have for that, Daniel Schilliger and Andreas Kempf.
Yes, I was waiting for any car that's only got two, you're waiting for the late person to turn up in the paddock and put some money on the counter.
But with the big, attaché is a cash.
Yes, but that said, you know, with that 3 hours and then the break overnight, you can do it with two drivers, can't you?
I suppose you can. I'm annoyed with myself because I've clearly left the regs in the back of the year four. And
No, they were here. Here they are. Regs retreat. Yeah, they are.
Thank you. Let's have those.
We've just spread over the entire commentary box.
Yes, we've taken over the two local guys who were chatting away at the moment.
If you're just going to have a look at that, Maximilian Buch, who's leading the way in one, and no doubt when he gets in the number two SLS AMG will go top in that. He's had an incredible past couple of years and really been a superstar in the Blancpain series for HTP Motorsport for Mercedes, so he knows them forward and backward. And quite a few of these cars, they have the hot shot, as we said, Renger van der Zander in the 33, the Martini liveried one. And he said himself, you know, this, he's sort of stepping down a bit, but loves the circuit and obviously has a history having raced for Mercedes in DTM. So he's in that car. So quite a few cars. Peter Cox here, as we said, driving for Praha Racing. Unusual, as we said, John, not to have him in a Lamborghini these days.
Yeah.
But I think I first met Peter back when he was in, must have been Opel Lotus back in about 1987. And yes, gosh, how the years have flown by.
And he still talks about that meeting today, Bruce.
He does, you know.
Still holds the touring car lap record around Thruxton.
And you know what? He's still born on the same day of the year as I am.
That's very
good. And Justin Bell and Satoru Nakajima.
All the same day.
Peter was the quickest. On either side, I think I have Niki Lauda and Alain Prost. One's on the 22nd of February and one on the 24th, but I fell into the 23rd.
That's just...
There we are. It's quite remarkable, the gibberish.
I have wandered off and done some research, by the way.
Have you?
Oh, dear.
What is for lunch?
That's next. There are four petrol pumps.
Correct.
And one diesel pump.
Correct. I've just found that in the regs.
The petrol pumps are very nice, sort of, you know...
with the blue canopies.
Yes, off your forecourt with the numbers, so they can work out how much you spent, and more importantly, give you the correct number of Green Shield stamps. But the diesel one is...
You are showing your age there, Damon.
What do you have to do? Go up behind a truck for the diesel, is that right?
Well, the diesel one just has one of those kind of hand... It seems to have one of those hand crankers. So I'm not sure whether one of the Creventic people's been working out, but I think it just looks like something's been done very kind of like... You know, the pumps where they initially get the fuel out of the drums for before they put them into the normal overhead fuelers for Le Mans Series and World Endurance. It's like one of those. It's sort of like a hand cranky thing. So I'm not sure whether the crankies are involved, but it's...
Well, let's hope not, eh? Just to say that we've had Mercedes dominating, but now we have a Corvette, the V8 racing one, which in our little programme is a black picture, but I can tell you it's yellow.
That
has just gone top. As we speak, he's just slapped it. Oh, just 3 seconds faster than Maximilian Buch, who'd set the time before. So number five, V8 racing Corvette, top of the charts.
While we're talking about refuelling... Refueling area speed limit is 20 kilometres an hour, as it is in the weighing area, 40 kilometres up and down the pit lane. And I still haven't managed to find the regs about how long you can drive. I think the problem with two drivers is, I think you've got to get out for at least the amount of time you've driven for. So if your teammate has an issue, and you've been in for 3 hours, and he has an issue out for an hour and a half, and he can't drive, you're rather snookered there. I'll do some more reading later. We have got a code 60 out on the circuit at the moment, so the purple flags with the big 60 in the middle. And this is... Oh, we're getting ready for what we'll be seeing at Le Mans, of course, in the slow zones this year. All changed at the 24 Hours of Le Mans at the Circuit de la Sarthe. And don't forget, we'll have live coverage from there on Sunday. But this is the first time we saw it used in competition, Bruce. And I think it works really well.
Oh, I was really, really impressed in Dubai this year. I'm just trying to gauge, looking out of that window, having said we can see 70% of the track, I can't see where the problem is, but there is a slow-moving course vehicle going through the chicane towards the end of the lap. He's only got two corners to go. There's nothing out of Kumo Bock, which is the penultimate corner.
They've also sent out a black 120D, which I think is a course car, which has got leading car written on it, and they're about to send out an ambulance as well. So I'm not sure whether this is a full course test or it's actually a problem.
I think a bunch of cars coming out. I can't see anything back. Through Gerlach Bock, which is the second corner, is that... leading car, the black BMW estate car you mentioned. Quite a few cars coming into the pit.
That's a 320D estate car. Your automotive knowledge, Nick, is poor, I'm afraid.
I've discounted BMW as a manufacturer because they don't enter any proper championships. When they enter the World Endurance Championship of Formula 1, I'll start talking about them again, but as long as they're in the DTM Comedy Cup, it's not much point.
And your point is?
I just wanted to come back. I
so when back. The, so I when the LMP1 back. Appears, you'll be fine with them?
No, LMP1's fine. But they're not even in the GTE class anymore in Europe. They fiddle about a bit in the States still, but this doesn't count. No. I implore BMW to follow to make sure they're recognised by me as a major manufacturer by entering a major championship within the next 6 months.
Okay, Nick, just pulling you away from the abyss that you're approaching.
Oh, the hole that I'm digging deeper all the time, you mean?
I'm increasingly...
Gerhard Berger on the phone's got a job for you, Nick.
Really? What, do I have to rearrange single seasons by having more single season championships and then try to patent a name and then decide not to patent the name and then say, oh, flip it, I'll just put my cousin, I'll put my nephew in and see if he can win?
Yeah.
Meanwhile, out on track, I think this is just a full test. And in fact, we can see the drivers dropping down. We can see various course vehicles around the circuit, but they are just driving around. And I think this is a very good idea.
It
a lot of these drivers have
the
never
chance to see what's happening.
Yeah.
And the reason the course vehicles are out, of course, is if you've listened to our coverage or seen any of the streaming video, and there will be more streaming video from here this weekend, by the way. I'm interrupting myself here, sorry, doing a haven. It's www.live.12hseries.com. The entry lists, live timing, and some live video on there as well. And the live video builds to a crescendo, obviously. I mean, you might even see Nick Damon. The reason that the course vehicles are out is because the organisers here, far from saying that outside intervention takes you out, they positively encourage outside intervention to get you back to the pit stop, to get you moving again. And we've seen it done very, very well and to great effect, Bruce, in things like the 12 hours at Dubai, the 24 hours
at
Dubai.
Yeah, in things in the dark.
Yeah.
And people get it very quickly, and I think if people haven't come across it at first, they might think, oh my, good grief, what are we driving so slowly for? But it delays everybody at the same rate. And just looking now, just how the course vehicles, the medical car, red BMW estate car, was able to come far faster than 60 down the straight to do what he needed to do. And
the streaming video, in fact, Tim tells me, is on our website. If you go to the forum page and to the 12 hours live Friday thread that is there. There's some resources on there and some live streaming video as well. And it's on the Zandvoort 12 hour page as well, which is where all the podcasts will appear throughout the weekend. I know one or two people were asking about that. Just 10 minutes still to go as the cars continue to circulate under code 60, neither getting closer to or further from the cars around them, and that of course is one of the great advantages of doing it this way. There's a relatively busy pit lane if you're watching on the web feed that we've got on the Zandvoort 12 hour page on RadioLeMans.com, and just an amazing array of resources that Creventic put together thanks to the guys at timing.nl.
Yeah, fabulous job.
Absolutely.
World leading.
Brilliant. And it is one of those things where you tend to just think, if this event can do it, and with due respect to the ladies and gentlemen at Creventic, it isn't the biggest set of organising club in the world. It is a solid but smallish Bijou set of people, but if they can do it, they can get the guys from the timing to do it, why can't others?
But just to explain what we're looking at this timing screen, we have the positions, one down to 24 on the left hand side. We have the who's in and out of the pits is the next column, then we've got the car numbers, the name of the driver, the classes, we've got their best times, then each of the sectors and the differences.
Yeah.
So we've got about a dozen different columns of time. They're completely clear.
And during the race, there's a separate. If you don't want that much, but you just want to know
how, narrow it down.
You can narrow it down and see where people are via class.
Yeah.
So I've got a choice of screens. We've got a GPS tracking system as well. It is very, very impressive. And that is again a small team, but small but perfectly formed. And
in fact, that ambulance there has just said it's best lap, I'm fairly sure, looking at the screens.
And we see 1 minute green flag, which actually means 1 minute to the end of the code 60, because it isn't just a green flag thrown out on the start-finish line. The beauty of code 60 is that all of the purple flags are withdrawn at the same time under a announcement instruction from race control, and they will be literally counted down. And once those go in, unfortunately we have got a green flag right in front of us.
Ambulances have just retreated at the various points around the circuit from which they started, and back up to full speed. In fact, not all the drivers are up to full speed. We're leading to some interesting moments as a Mercedes goes down the inside of a BMW into Tarzan, having arrived much faster. The driver of the BMW obviously caught napping there by the move back to green flag Lappery.
There was some confusion. I was actually looking out over the pit wall at that point, and there was definite confusion. A couple of the more saloon-based cars having a lovely Sunday afternoon drive. They had their coffee out and they had the tartan rug over their knees. And the SLS came barreling past at least 50 miles an hour faster. I assume he'd seen the green at the start of the straight, and they were still waiting to see it.
Yeah, they might have just passed the start gantry.
But that's something that they need to sort out. In racing situations, that could cause some problems. And they might just need to have another green flag, just so that people know they need to actually get the move on prior to find themselves being attacked by a GT3 machine going significantly faster and looking for a way round where there may not be one.
Well, there we go. Having had this test session for that very purpose, that suggestion can be made, and that's the whole point of it.
Now, we haven't had any driver interviews yet, Nick. Come on.
Oh, all right. Blimey. Demanding your old age, aren't you?
It's only Friday. Oh, hold on. It's race day. Oh, we've got a Seat off at the side of the circuit. I think it just going over Hunsrug. I think that's the Zest racing entry. Zest Race Car Engineering, Martin Hal Gutscher from Denmark, and I don't know the Christian name, Woodman from Britain. Just trying to see on the screens. That's just pulled to the side of the circuit. So ironically, we have the code 60 when there's nothing wrong, and then immediately we have a number 44 pulling to the side of the circuit. Can't see on the other timing screen. It is Martin. It's the Danish driver, Martin Holtz-Gutsch, who's pulled up in 36th position out of the 52 runners. So that'll be frustrating. This session has only got a handful of minutes left, 5.5 minutes remaining. And this isn't qualifying, this is sighting. And already we have, even though the cars are going around the circuit, we have another course vehicle. But very clear, sponsored by Formido, takes the grass on the inside of Hugenholz box to keep out of the way. He can then run up the grass verge, up the slope, and get to the stricken Seat. But very, very frustrating for Zest Motorsport Engineering. No fastest times obviously coming through. We still have to get drivers up to full racing speed over an entire lap. But the target time set by Rick Abresh in the V8 Racing Corvette, 1:44.181, just under 3 seconds faster than the number one Mercedes set when Maximilian Buch was on board. But that came into the pits during the code 60, and Kenneth Heyer has now taken over that car.
So you're listening to free practice part one. Not a lot of time to get everybody through the practice sessions in official trim at least, but many of these cars of course have taken advantage of the, effectively as Nick was calling it, a promoter test session this morning, and there were a couple of sessions yesterday, and there was a higher car session yesterday afternoon, which rather unfortunately we arrived just on the very end.
Yes, had we had caught that Eurotunnel that we've been hoping for and the next one not being cancelled, we could have been there. Worth pointing out, this session will end in 4 minutes precisely. They have a 10-minute break and then straight into qualifying, but that's for the A1 class, A1 to A5, and the diesel classes, the smaller cars, effectively. And then we will build up through the sessions for the final one. So very little time to get going. And, of course, we start racing this afternoon at 4 o'clock for 3 hours, the first 3 hours of this 12-hour event.
So the 44 Seat then still sitting out at post 6. And yeah, that is the problem at the moment out there. Go ahead.
There's a car that's interesting, Lee. It's the 76 Nissan, because it's down under the GT Academy. No, we had a Dutch GT Academy.
Ah, now, well, we were talking about this yesterday. We've seen this car in Dutch Championship Racing before. And it's the 76 car, did you say?
Yeah, let me see if I can help. There's a driver who's got the overalls on. They don't fit him very well. And his name's taped up.
76?
So I'm going to have to ask.
Yeah,
76, Nissan Nederland.
Let me grab a quick word.
In the SP3 class.
Hi there. First of all, I can't see. What's your name?
Max Kubold.
Max, you're with the 76 Nissan machine. First of all, obviously, it's in several pieces. What's the problem?
Well, on the free pressing, my teammate spun at the end of the Ariel Limelight board. So he ended up in the wall with the front. We fixed it, but we drove out. The radiator is leaking, so we now fix it for the qualifying.
Can you explain the relationship between you guys and the Nissan GT Academy?
Well, I'm just a guest driver now, so I don't know really. But what I thought the Dutch driver from this GT Academy are driving, not this year I thought, but the few years 2011 and 12 they drove in the Nissan.
So they haven't repainted it basically?
Sorry?
They haven't repainted the car basically?
No.
Basically, Max. So that's your answer for it. It's a car that needs a new wrap by the sound of it.
Oh, well, that will then explain, Nick, precisely who went off coming out of the Arri Loijendijk-Bock coming onto the start finish straight while we were doing the systems check.
There we are. So it was the it was his teammate. It wasn't him. Just for...
And that was in the test session early on, yeah.
So,
Oh, you need...
Either Sander van S...
Message for Nick. Message for Nick. Go to setting four.
Yeah,
setting
four. Or Neil's somebody. So yes, it wasn't. But it wasn't Max. He's very keen to put that out.
Setting four, Nick. Setting four.
One thing I would say about Max is not only is he a guest driver, he's definitely got some guest overalls. They are. Put it this way, it's rather like Bradley getting an overall designed for Bruce.
Ah. I see.
What, slimmer around the waist?
Well, he's not having quite so much issue on the slimming. It's more the massive rucking on the leg.
Hello to At Fair Use, 6:30 in the morning in Washington DC, and tuned in, and I can see from the picture that he's just tweeted through there that they're taking full use of all of the accoutrement on the website that we were mentioning earlier.
Surely it's 7:30.
No.
They're 5 hours behind. Oh,
six,
no, we're not in England.
You?
Nick, stop being clever when you're not.
You're so cosmopolitan.
I forgot I was in foreign land. I didn't realise.
So, full day today of action here. As far as the 12-hour cars are, remember, it's 3 hours tonight, 9 hours tomorrow. And that's not the end of the weekend, because from early morning... UK time, certainly, ridiculously early morning. Poor Tim in London's got a bunch of early starts this weekend, with everything being on Central European time. The only full live coverage, the only live coverage at all, in fact, from Le Mans 24 Hours. Mobile One, Radio Le Mans, 91.2 FM. If you're heading down, you're listening to us now and heading down to test day, we have got the FM transmitter. It's en route in the Nissan NV400, big silver van with Radio Le Mans broadcast team on the side. You can't miss it. And alongside it is a Daytona Grey Q7 with Radio Le Mans all over it. Interestingly
now,
enough.
While we're just waiting for the checkered flag, which has just come out. There we go, to the end of this half-hour free practice session. If you're looking at the live pictures, you see the numbers, not the illuminated numbers on the side of the car. That isn't class position, it's actual position. So
right.
I've just seen a car coming past back with 34 on the side. So that's Patrick Wolf. A2 thing, the orders are changing, but what we haven't had is a change at the top. We've had number one with Kenneth Hayer, one of the Mercedes, getting much closer to Rick Abresh, took a second off, but V8 Racing and Corvette top of the timesheets as we go into qualifying.
And we've seen that Corvette be very quick in the past, of course. There's still plenty of life in those big engines, and sound fantastic here as well. The time has elapsed, the checkered flag is out, and let's run down through some times. And it is the number 5 Corvette that leads them out, the 7 litre ahead of the merely 6.2, almost a voiturette, isn't it, the number 5 of V8 Racing. Then in fact, as I say that, coming to the checkered line, through goes the 33 Mercedes-Benz, and that is the Car Collection Motorsport, the German entered team, and Peter Schmidt has taken the 33 car to the top of the standings with a 42.9. So right at the very end there, all the time in the first...
You're right.
In the first sector, yes.
Yeah.
3 seconds in the first sector.
And in the second sector, he also improved by the blink of an eye. But
yeah.
Don't forget, this is the car that Renger van der Zander is guesting in. So when it comes to qualifying, you feel fairly sure the hot shoe will go faster still. So we've... been given, okay, that was a session that was interrupted by the Sector 60, I think it was very well done indeed, but we've been given a taster of what the 33, the Martini liveried SLS AMG can get onto.
So it's 33.5.1, Mercedes-Benz Corvette, the number one of the two Hoffa Racing cars, the other one being the 3 car, which we'll come to in a moment. In fourth position, the number 9 is the Ferrari 458, the Czech Republic entered Scuderia Praha entry. And then it's the number 3 in fifth position. The 7 GDL Racing, the San Marino entered Mercedes-Benz, is in sixth position. And times varying. I suspect that a varying degree of driver talent has been in those cars. We'll run down the top 10 for you, because there's a couple of pole sitters in the other classes there. In 7th position, the number 90 SP2 pole sitter is the Las Moras Racing Team McGann trophy car. Now that is a 3.5 litre, don't forget that car. That is in 7th position. In 8th is another A6 GT3 car, and that is the...
It's the second Hofer Racing.
Second Hofer Racing car. Sorry, I've mixed up the two Hofers and the Car Collection Motorsport car. My apologies. I thought they were 1 and 3. They are indeed 1 and 2. Behind them, the A5, Paul Sitter is... Sorry, fastest time. We're not into qualifying yet. The number 30... and that
Top Auto Tyler Racing.
Ah, yes, the same. Yeah,
we picked out early. It was going quite well early on.
You tend to see these, mention these names, and they'll be mentioned time and time again, because there does not seem, in this form of racing, to be an awful lot of people playing catch up. What you see is what you get. Behind those guys in 10th position, the 104 is Ivo Brukes, a great friend of us here at Radio Le Mans, in the SP3. And that'll be one of the Red Camel Jordan's cars, isn't it?
Yeah, it's an Audi R8.
Oh, that is the Audi R8. Right.
No, there are two Audi R8s, because there's one in the SP2 class, which is the Besa Plus racing team of Marcin Chaunier.
Yes, the 4.2. I think that's the car that they've taken a couple of times to Dubai.
It is.
Which is built from a road car and not a racing car.
Yeah, but
it's a crashed road car.
What I like with that is Martin also takes another car to race in another class in the 24 hours of Dubai. He takes a Mini Cooper of some variety. So we're extolling how in Dubai you get a lot of track time. He gets even more.
Didn't he at one stage, I think they had three cars at one stage, and they were all leading their class, I think, not last year, but the year before. But certainly very big supporter of this form of racing. I'll just quickly tell you that in 13th place is the top A3T car, which I've just lost that on the screen there as I was distracted for a moment. The 82, which is MDM Motorsport.
Yeah, that was the one we were commenting about how well it was driven early on. And if you're listening and watching in Australia, the third best of the SP2 class is Brett Nile in one of the three V8 Ford Focuses. And I must say, when you look at them, you know, these are bodies, they're totally interchangeable, and it just happens to be a Ford body on top, but a lot more sort of ducting and radiator work than you get on your average Focus road car.
Right, that is the test session then into the history books. We'll have a quick think about that. You can have a short break listening to us on RadioLeMans.com around the world, and we'll be back with the build-up to qualifying for the Hankook 12-hour Zandvoort next here on RadioLeMans.com.
The Hankook 12 Hours of Zandvoort on RadioLeMans.com. This program is a Radio Show Limited production. For more, go to www.radiolemans.com. Radio Show Limited. We talk to the world.